Sox on 35th is next. Doors open on the left.
How's it going, everybody? My name is Duke Coughlin, and welcome to the Sox on 35th podcast. We are back with another exciting episode covering your Chicago White Sox. This is going to be the first episode actually in season. Have quite a bit to talk about, even though the White Sox have quite a bit of runs they're not scoring. As always, I'm joined by our panelists, Jordan Zosky and Nick Gower. Gentlemen, how are we doing?
You ever think sometimes about fandom and like why we're doing this? Like, as I'm putting together this rundown, I'm like, this is going to be a long year. Like, we have a decent amount for this episode, but it's like, why did we choose this team to be a fan of and be diehards and religious followers of, other than the other 29 teams? Like, maybe two or three of those I really wouldn't want to cover on an episode today, but you ever really think about that? Like, the diehard, everything about this team, and, you know, you live on the highs and the lows, and writing the rundown for this got me in a very contemplative mood today, is what I'll say.
Yeah, I feel you on that, although I'll take the more optimistic angle for one of the rare times on this podcast, and I'll say that while I agree with you, for whatever reason, I just wrote like 3,000 words about the White Sox. Like, I actually felt motivated to write about them, and I, but really, as much as I'm down on them, I'm not saying I'm excited. I don't know where it's coming from, but I feel ready to talk at least.
And you know what's crazy? I wrote an article last week too, the first time through the rotation. I sat down, wrote it. I'm like, this feels good to enjoy this. I'm like, I don't know when it's going to come again. But to your point, I get it. It's like, yeah, at the same time, I genuinely enjoyed writing that article. There were things to write about and be interested by. So, but I still come back to why this team? Why did we choose this fandom? There was another team across town we could have all chosen. Like, it's not even like a locality thing that we ended up here. It's like, anywho. Duke, how are you?
Well, you say the locality thing, and I think it's funny because, you know, I'm the guy from Wisconsin and everything, but like, my dad literally was raised in Bridgeport. Very much like a part of like the fiber of like how my family was raised. We were always really big White Sox fans. We were always big Chicago fans in general. And we were just loyal to a T. That's my biggest problem, is I'm just too damn loyal to the teams I root for. And the fact that the White Sox just happen to be the team that I love, it's brutal, you know? And honestly, the 05 World Series was a trap to get me completely hooked for life. And then even when they were bad for a couple years there, they hit a lot of home runs, which naturally, when you're young watching baseball team, home runs are fun. You know, you don't even care about the standings at that point. So to sound logical to explain it, that's why. But yeah, no, it's pretty brutal. Anyway, it's great to hear that we're all in awesome spirits to start the season. In fact, I would say our positivity is about a 1 out of 9, but we have quite a bit to cover in this episode. But before we get started, be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, and anywhere else to get your podcast. Also, be sure to check out the website, SoxOn35th.com, as well as following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at SoxOn35th.
I just got that 1 out of 9 point. That was a pretty good one. That was one of those you got to think about. That was pretty good. I like that.
Yeah, I'm glad you explained it to all the folks at home so they got it too. So now that we're, you know, talking about fun numbers, 16 runs in 9 games. The White Sox offense, not visible. The White Sox defense, apparently the thing we, you know, improved upon the most, really reared its ugly head on Sunday. In a game that Garrett Crochet pitched fairly well in, got hit a little bit at the end of, but overall probably deserved to get the nod for the W. And honestly, the offense scoring 3 runs in a Sunday baseball game at the start of the year, that should be enough in theory. But somehow we just find another way. And that seems to be the story of the White Sox from last year. Seems to be the story of the White Sox early on this year. How do you fix the White Sox offense currently?
I mean, I think what you do is you wait for the weather to warm up and all of a sudden this team is just going to take off. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
I mean,
sounds like an episode of 2021 Sox on 35th. Yeah.
Right. No. Realistically, I mean, as much as I'm not optimistic about the actual hitters on the team. I hate to be the, like, you know, oh, there's going to be positive regression guy, but there really will be. Like, there's no way this team is going to have a 220 BABIP or whatever it is all season. And as much as everyone's down on, like, Vaughn and Benintendi right now, while they might not be what we hope they would be, they're not, like, negative weighted run created plus guys. Like, they might be bad, but they're not, like, hitting 100 bad. So really, you just hope for that kind of regression to come. And other than that, without Robert and Jimenez for who knows how long, I don't think they can be any better than a bottom three offense. But at the same time, scoring 1.5 runs per game or whatever, I'm not going to do the math on that. Whatever it is, I don't think they'll be that bad either. There's some positive regression coming, but it's not going to be so much to where the games are necessarily watchable, in my opinion.
Yeah, I just don't know. I think that it's the same problems, but these are different guys. It's the same thing of, I will sit down, watch an inning, and five pitches later, the inning's over. We've gone through three different, the team has gone through three different hitting coaches. This lineup has three of the same people in it from the past couple years, and it's the same issues with different players. How can you not find somebody else to do something different? I think that's the most frustrating thing for me. We knew this offense was going to be bad. We made jokes all offseason. Yeah, we're going to lose the most 1-0 or 2-1 ball games ever. And I think we've already lost, what, 4 or 5 one-run games out of 9? Like, it wasn't that anyone didn't expect this. It's just more so the way in which they continue to go about doing it is the most frustrating way possible. Yeah, sure, great. They're done in 2 hours and 15 minutes. Like, we can get back to our days. But if you're going to be a bad offensive team, the last thing I want to watch you do is go up there, be out of an inning in five pitches, and call it a day. Like, that's not even enjoyable to watch. Dare I say, the first few games, they were kind of enjoyable to watch. Since that first day or two against Detroit, it has been brutal trying to watch at-bats.
I mean, I would say, and Nick, honestly, to your point, I agree with you that, you know, like, a lot of the players that we have on our team that have been in the league long enough, you know, it's really hard to get past, especially early on in the season, if you had any sort of expectations. It's hard to get past that level of struggle, but historically, those guys start to even themselves out. You know, like, I'm trying really hard not to get, like, too caught up on the slow starts from the individual players. The start of the season record-wise, that's unforgivable to me. Just based on the fact that we've been in most all of these games, it's not a situation where we've just genuinely gotten completely blown out and gotten the break speed off us. You know what I mean? Like, even in the Atlanta series, like, there was never a situation in most of those games where I'm like, wow, we are just getting completely manhandled in this game by a team that's genuinely light years ahead of us. You know what I mean? So there's that level of optimism if I'm going to grasp at any, but really, I guess the biggest thing that I'm seeing in the first like over a week here is just the inability to manufacture runs, some really wild steal calls, some really wild hit and run calls, not totally understanding the timing or who we're choosing to put in those situations. It just, I don't understand Pedro Grifol's philosophy offensively so far. And I think that's a big problem, because if we're a team that's not hitting home runs consistently, we have to be able to manufacture runs. And if we're not doing that, and if we're not being able to do that in the right situations and being able to do it consistently, like, we're going to have a lot of problems. We're going to lose, you know, kind of like you said, Laz, we're going to lose a lot of these one run ball games because we weren't able to get runners moved in ways outside of either guys getting walked or somebody getting a hit. And, you know, relying on the White Sox to get hits right now is it's a tough ask. You know, Sunday was a bit of an outlier so far in the season, but
it's the same things over and over. They haven't not created offense. Their offense has just been singles. Like, they're trying to single teams to death again. Like, the one guy you brought in who was just home run or nothing, which is what he's been so far, Paul DeJong, you don't play him over a guy like Braden Shoemake, who just is going to be a singles hitter if he even hits the ball. It's like, you're not even trying anything different. You didn't bring in home run power, absolutely, I get that. But the few guys you have that would kind of balance that out, you're not even playing them. And I'm not saying the buck 76 that Paul DeJong is hitting would change anything. I'm saying it's a different approach to things. It's a different style of saying, hey, I know we're going to suck as an offense, but let's put this guy in the lineup every day, see if he hits 10 to 15 bombs. And at least from there, we've guaranteed ourselves a few runs here and there. It's having Braden Shumake continue to hit. It's having Nicky Lopez continue to hit. It's this scrappy ball club offense that needs to string three or four hits together just to score a run. And we see how that works. Like, you're seeing it in action. Everyone who just wants to focus on putting the ball in play and moving runners, you're seeing what happens when you build an offense of that style. You don't score runs ever anymore. It is too hard to string together three, four hits in a row to score a run. And you're trying to play an aggressive style with of baseball with guys who aren't made to do that. Eloy Jimenez on the ball in the dirt. Great idea. Way to be aggressive. You're up by 50 feet because it wasn't the right play to run on. That's just not how he's made to play baseball. A lot of these guys are the same way. So you're trying to fit square pegs into round holes, and you're doing it with too old of a style of offense in too modern of a game to make it work.
Yeah, and I think on that note too, it's not even just the style, but it's just the way that they've gone about executing it. Like, this is one of the things that I was writing about, but they say, you know, to Jordan's point, oh, we're going to be scrappy, we're going to run hard and all this stuff, and that's going to offset for the lack of power. And in the first series against Detroit, they were kind of doing that. They were hustling out ground balls. They tried and failed at, you know, hitting runs and whatnot. And to Atlanta, but especially against in the Kansas City series over the weekend. I mean, like, Nicky Lopez will hit a routine ground ball and just completely jog it out. And I'm like, okay, like, I don't.
Right.
Like, I'm not offended by that, but that's the opposite of what you told me was going to happen. Like, it seems like they've been very selective, or they just forgot about this whole, like, hustle all the time thing.
Right. Like, Detroit, and that's why I was saying those first few games were watchable. I'm like, there were a few balls that guys either beat out or forced errors on. It's like, oh, you know, if they're going to do this. Like, I'm not Mr. Old School. I love when guys run hard on weak ground outs to second base. I don't need to see that. But if you're going to commit to that, it's good to see. Like, I was like, oh, maybe, like, yeah, Grifol is not the world's greatest manager, but if he can get them to buy in for 162, you've at least intrigued me into what your message could be to guys. Six games later, that's out the window. Everyone's jogging things. I'm sure they got scared with the Jimenez and Robert injuries and just said, we're done doing that again, which is not what you said you were going to do. So not only is it a brand of baseball that doesn't work, but the part of it that was kind of making it enjoyable for that first series, you just abandoned it because it doesn't work.
Well, I think, and it kind of fits into me complaining about Nicky Lopez getting thrown out by a mile. Unintentional hilarity on Sunday was Nicky Lopez on that hit, basically like rounding aggressively. And like, you can tell he was like putting a lot into it. There was a lot of hustle on that single that he was going to try to turn into a double if something goes wrong. Honestly, like I just watched him, and I watched him when he got the pickoff attempt thrown his way as well. And I'm convinced he gassed himself so much from hustling out that first play and, diving back on that pickoff attempt, that's why he got thrown out so badly. Like, I'm not saying Nicky Lopez is probably running 4.4 speed right now, but it adds up with how badly that play went. And that's kind of the caveat of, if you're not a great hitting team and you're going to be the hustle team and everything like that, and then you gas yourself out at first base before you have an opportunity to do anything, it was just like, this is the most White Sox thing ever. That's just what I grabbed from that situation. And speaking of the most White Sox thing ever, tale as old as time. I want to preface this by saying I never like making light of injuries, but this is the same song and dance that we see every single year. And Luis Robert and Eloy Jimenez are injured. No other. It's a tough pill to swallow every year. You know, and we set ourselves.
Pick which podcast it's from. Yeah. Is this from a 2021 podcast, a 2022 podcast, a 2023 or a 2024?
Yeah.
That statement.
You know, it's a tale as old as time. And, you know, as me being a big Eloy guy, I always just I almost want to curl into a ball every time he gets injured, because I know the graphic's going to get posted on Twitter about how many injuries he's had and everything like that. And I start hearing the how disappointing it is and everything like that. But then in the back of my head, and I try to just avoid this thought altogether, I'm like, oh, man, what is Luis next? Are we going to see Luis's fucking graphic next, to where we see his injury history? And here we are, you know. Jordan, in your opinion, is Eloy Jimenez one of the biggest disappointments in Chicago sports history?
I don't like putting labels on things like that, I'll be honest with you. I think it's overreactionary. What he's put up when healthy has been good enough to say, and even better than good enough to say, yeah, you see what the talent is there. I don't know how we evaluate injury prone versus training staff. And the initial thing is everyone blames the training staff. There have been enough changes over the years, and there have been, more importantly, way too many injuries, that at a certain point it's like, are you the problem, or are we going to keep blaming the training staff? Like, at a certain point, either you're just injury prone or you're not doing enough. I don't know. Biggest disappointment, I don't like labels like that, especially from guys who went on the field have been good. There are multiple first round draft picks in the past few years that either haven't played or, you know, just never lived up to the billing. I consider those bigger disappointments than the one who, when healthy, looked like the type of player you assumed you were going to get. That's just me on that.
Yeah, I agree. Also not the biggest fan of the, you know, the labels and whatnot, but whether it's Jimenez or Robert, even Moncada gets thrown into these debates a lot. I feel like when the player has had multiple good seasons, then it's kind of hard for me to put him in that kind of category. And as for, like, you know, the who's at fault kind of thing, I feel like my initial reaction tends to be more just like, oh, I feel bad for the player for getting hurt. Or frankly, I feel bad for myself for having to watch a baseball team without these players. So it's kind of a mix of multiple things there. But one thing I always say when these conversations come up, that I'll say again here, is that White Sox fans tend to think that, like, no one else gets hurt running the bases. It's only us. And maybe, yes, the amount is a little concerning, but the Twins fans that I follow have these debates like every week too. Like, Royce Lewis and Byron Buxton get hurt on routine plays like all the time. And I'm not even saying it's their fault. I'm just saying some players, like, it just is what it is. So it's obviously unfortunate, but it's not just us either.
I think the training staff stuff, to a point, at a certain point, gets dumb. And I've made, like, oh, you need to change the coaching staff or the training staff and stuff. I've made those comments, but it's like, you have to take a step back and think, what is this training staff not doing that they would need to be doing more of? Like, I see people like, oh, they're not qualified. No, you need licenses to even get these jobs. These are qualified individuals. So that's just a stupid comment. Or I see people, it's like, what do you think these trainers are doing? Like, telling them, hey, make sure you stretch. Like, these are athletes. They know how to put themselves in situations to compete. Like, you can lead a horse to water. You can't make it drink. Like, if guys aren't taking care of themselves based on what licensed professionals are saying, that becomes a player problem, or they're just injury prone. That's very possible too. You can't predict that. You could have the best training staff in the world and you can only hope to mitigate it. I don't know. I just, when I see those comments, I'm like, what do you think the training staff is doing right now compared to what you would want them to be doing?
So I agree with that to a point, because I think player responsibility does need to be more kind of brought up. And I'm somebody who consistently does go after the training staff, but I think my biggest problem was really when the White Sox changed their staff. I believe it was either at the end of in 2019 or 2020. And it just kind of felt like moving forward from there was a significant change in our health, like across the board. And you know, it's not even so much of like bringing in a new staff and thinking they'll immediately clean things up. It's just, I know that if you do get a bad staff at any point, bad habits die really hard. And you know, when you're put into a regimen, you like early on in your career and you feel like it's something that works for you, you know, you feel good when you're doing these workouts, or you have like a post game kind of regimen that you built up when they were originally there and you don't really want to change it because you're this far into your career, that can be something that can really throw people off. I as someone who complains about training staff, bringing in a new training staff next year, that doesn't immediately fix everything. I just don't think we have managed our training staff well enough in the past that we're seeing it still kind of play out today. And I'll still go back to 2021 with how early we brought back Luis Robert and Aloy Jimenez as big reasons as to why they have a hard time staying on the field now. Because I really think we rushed that entire process a lot faster than we should have. And that can that has devastating long-term effects. You know, rushing a player back to injury. You know, I know we're in the big shoulder city of Chicago where everybody has to be tough and, you know, play with blood and spit in their face and everything like that. But it's not it. The human body can only agree with that so much before it's like, hey, you're putting a lot of fucking strain on me. This isn't going to work long term. And that's why we continue to get things like this. And, you know, back to the original point, and then we can move on of Aloy being one of the biggest disappointments in Chicago sports history. I really echo a lot of what you guys say. We've had so many players who have come in with such high expectations who never even like got off to a start, like never did anything, you know. And this isn't even just a White Sox thing. You know, this is a Blackhawks thing, you know, getting first round picks that never developed into anything. The amount of quarterbacks the Chicago Bears have drafted in the first round that panned out to nothing, you know, Eddie Curry for the Bulls, Tyrus Thomas for the Bulls, two guys that never did anything resulting in where they were picked. So like Aloy Jimenez in his rookie year and Luis Robert, what he did last year, that alone would be something that most of the Chicago, like worst disappointments in Chicago sports history, they'd love to have a season like that in their respective sport because they never even smelled that. So injuries happen, and it's very hard for me to really go too hard on a player when their body fails. You know, I was a huge, huge Derrick Rose fan. I love Derrick Rose to this day, and his body failed him, and we were able to see what he was before injury. And when you see him get injured after that, I was never one that was like, oh, here we go again. It was like, man, I feel terrible because I know what this guy was. Kind of moving on with a bit of the roster moves. You know, Alex Spias and Jose Rodriguez were removed from the 40-man roster. A lot of discussion about Jose Rodriguez on Twitter. Ended up being a cash considerations casualties, as I like to call them, because, you know, Jerry Reinsdorf loves his money so much. What was your thoughts of the removal of Spias and Rodriguez from the 40-man roster? Is the White Sox World Series run over without Jose Rodriguez?
Yes, but it was over before Jose
Rodriguez. But it was over with him, too.
Right, exactly. No, I mean, I had a good chat about this with some of our writer and Jordan, too, in our Slack chat. But I think what it comes down to for me is it's not so much how I feel about these players themselves. I did like Rodriguez, and it's a little annoying seeing him just go for cash when he's still 22, but that's not the end of the world. What annoys me is just more the 40-man roster problems this team has appear to be sort of made up. And I'm not doing like, the 40-man roster is fake. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that so much of it is just players who, if the White Sox DFA'd them tomorrow, we'd all say, okay, like, cool, great. And you have a couple of players, maybe not Spies, but like someone in Rodriguez who was a current top 30 prospect. And it's like, if you DFA'd him, there might be a little bit of reaction. So I just feel like you could maybe cut some of like the random veterans that don't really matter. I understand they need to promote someone from AAA or whatever, but at the end of the day, this is a rebuilding team. So I don't understand why we need to have like 20 random, you know, not trying to call out particular people, but like Dominic Leone types on the roster. Like that's what doesn't make sense to me. And to Getz's his credit, he makes evaluations and sticks with them and is comfortable trading people like with Christian Mena. But I think where my issue is, I don't know how much I trust those evaluations yet. So I think at the end of the day, it's kind of like a personal preference kind of thing as to what kind of players you want on your 40-man roster. And I just don't seem to agree with Getz on that.
Yeah, I go back and forth with this because I do see your point, Nick, and I do think pre-catastrophic rebuild Jordan would agree with you more. I think post-catastrophic rebuild Jordan has become a lot more skeptical and seen a lot more of the... I used to focus solely upside. I'm not saying you do this. I'm just saying more so how I used to approach and how I've changed it. I used to be all upside. I want all upside guys all the time. Now I'm like, all right, they're available for a reason. You know, they get moved for cash considerations only for reasons. They couldn't get a prospect for them. Like, if Jose Rodriguez had brought back some prospect from the Phillies, I would have been like, like, maybe there's a problem here. Like, maybe there's something wrong here. With the pitching side of things, though, with Spies and any other decisions they make there, I kind of keep the vets out of it. But those types of minor league guys, you assume guys like Spies, who they just brought in over the offseason, Bannister and Katz had their chance to evaluate them and either keep them on the roster like the Davey Garcias of the world or move on from them. I think trusting the evaluation is another thing. I think we've all kind of been excited about what Bannister could bring. I think there's an element of having to trust it. I think Christian Mann is there too. I think I'm still in the benefit of the doubt phase from the pitching side of things. I think hitting, Rodriguez just never showed growth. I know he was still young, but he still had plate discipline issues. And I don't think those were necessarily changing. That best season of his, like 2021, starts to look more like an outlier the further we get away from it. So I get the eval process there. Could come back to bite him in the ass, absolutely. I just think, I also look from the standpoint of what you get in return for guys. If you couldn't even get a prospect, and a team like the Phillies, who probably fall lower in the waiver order, got Rodriguez, I feel like that's more representative of where league sees him. Spies is a little bit different. The A's got him, and I think A's are going to be higher on the waiver wire, just record-wise. That's one, like, the first team possible snapped him up. And yeah, the A's just need bodies. I get that. So I don't know. This is my long way of saying I could kind of go both ways with it. I tend more pessimistic now, just simply seeing what only focusing on upside did for me previously. So that's where I land.
I'm kind of with you, Jordan. It kind of felt like a non-factor to me. Obviously, the Sox saw everything they needed to see out of him to kind of understand that maybe he wasn't a fit. And, you know, with the Phillies getting him, it kind of felt like, you know, Laz, you really kind of summed up what I was going to say was, you know, it's not really like the league was breaking down the door to get Jose Rodriguez, you know, and that's you look at the age and you always think of the upside. And I think naturally everybody looks at upside whenever they look at the age anyway. I think anytime you see somebody who's like 21 or 22 and they've had a good minor league season, there's always that optimism where it's like, man, this guy, all he needs is an opportunity. All he needs is a chance. You know, maybe if he just is in the burner for one more year, he can turn out. At a certain point, you can't hold on to those guys too long because it's taking away opportunities from other young guys to potentially get a chance at another stage. And, you know, you look at what the Barons are doing right now. They're playing some pretty good baseball down there. And maybe some of those guys from Birmingham, you know, deserve an opportunity to go up to AAA here at some point early on in the season. You know, and if a guy like Jose Rodriguez, who is continuing to be the same player that he's been, do you really want to stick with that guy, taking time away from a guy who could potentially get a little bit more of a road to the major leagues because he's playing really well and you want to see what he does against AAA pitching?
I will say, though, I think, Nick, I said the same thing when we initially had the discussions. Maino looking good so far is at least a point towards your favor, and they might be screwing up these evaluations of players.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see. And on Rodriguez in particular, the reason I have liked him at points over the years, I've kind of gone back and forth on him as a prospect, but he's had these runs every now and then where he'll hit like five home runs in 2 weeks. And I'm like, oh, this guy who's like a very like contact first, speedy middle infielder is hitting home runs like this. Like that's intriguing given his age. So if he ever finds that, that would be what would be like, oh, we regret this kind of move. But I know the odds of that are pretty slim. The only thing that I'll push back on, I think you both make valid points. The only thing that I don't fully agree with is, in terms of like, yeah, I'm not going to play Jose Rodriguez in the minors over Ramos or Montgomery or, you know, someone like that. But I also, I mean, and again, not to call it a specific player, I don't need Danny Mendick getting daily starts either. Like as much as...
Hey, you watch your mouth right now.
As much as he's a capable like backup infielder, I don't need him getting daily starts in Charlotte at age 29 or whatever he is. Like that's someone I would play.
He'd be pretty capable in our bullpen at this point.
Yeah, no kidding, right? Yeah. No, I get it, though. It's a valid point. Like, there are guys at AAA who don't need to be getting the at-bats they're getting. There are guys at the major league level that don't need to be getting the at-bats they're getting. So, like, it's an organizational-wide problem, though, at this point. And I think you make the point, Nick, like, we're probably going to look back at this in the next year or two and really have to evaluate, was it right for Getz to fill the roster with a bunch of journeymen who are just looking for a chance and they got this chip on their shoulder? Was that the right thing to do? I don't know if you're going to get an answer for that for another 2 or 3 years. It might not be the right thing to do. Like, it'll be hard for it to be the right thing to do, but it will be very easy to tell if it was the wrong thing to do. And that's if Christian Mayna looks good and Jose Rodriguez turns things around and guys like Spies really kind of figure it out. If guys you sent away end up being good, then it's the wrong decision. It's hard to make it the right decision, though, because more often than not, like, we've complained a lot about DFAs over the years. Which one's come back to bite the team in the ass? I don't think there has been one recently. The problem is, if guys start coming back to bite the Sox in the ass, then, yeah, now it's the wrong decision, objectively.
Yeah, well, and I think you're always going to find that type of thing in like, really across baseball. You're always going to find one of those guys that didn't work with even, like, really good organizations that they saw. They looked very lowly on this guy, and then he ends up going and being a pretty good MLB player somewhere else. Sometimes guys just find it. Sometimes they just find the right coach to be able to bring it out of them. I mean, as long as the White Sox continue to move in this direction, and honestly, I'm glad you brought up the journeyman point, because that's really a lot of what we have on the major league roster. Really hoping Getz brought that team in as it is, so it's a lot harder to be able to DFA them when we finally bring a guy up and we want him to stay up. It goes against the whole public persona of we're going to compete this year, but it goes more in line with the idea of we're going to gradually fill this roster up with young guys by the end of the year that we think can be long-term pieces. Hopefully that's the plan. We'll see how that goes. So obviously we kind of touched on this a little bit in the kind of the opening discussion. What's one player who's kind of had some struggles early on who you think can kind of start to turn it around, or at least get back to a little bit where they've been throughout their career?
I know you want me to say Andrew Benintendi, and I thought really hard about ways to not say Andrew Benintendi for this answer. However, I am going to say Andrew Benintendi for this answer because he has had the longest career of any of these guys. And I think the reality is, like, it's a cliche saying, but sometimes you got to look at the back of the baseball card. I don't think he forgot how to hit a major league baseball over the past couple months. I think it's going to be very hard for him to really live up to having a real good value from this contract. But I don't think it's unreasonable to expect that he's not a .143 hitter. I think that's where I land with him.
Yeah, for a similar reason, I'll take Andrew Vaughn for this. Not, again, kind of like Jordan, not that I think he's going to live up to the number three overall pick hype, but he's also not going to be this bad either. Like, I'm actually on board with the give Gavin Sheets some of those at-bats narrative once, you know, people, once Jimenez and people like that are back. But for now, you might as well keep playing him and just hope that he at least becomes the regular Vaughn that's like a league average-ish hitter. So again, it's kind of like Jordan, it's tough looking up and down this roster and like, oh, this guy's playing poorly. Yeah, that's probably going to continue. Oh, that's the thought I have for most of them. But right. For Vaughn and Benintendi to an extent, it's like, yeah, there should be some regression in there.
Vaughn, I'm more skeptical on. I'm concerned. I will say if there's one guy where I'm like, ooh, this is just has not looked good and you don't necessarily have a long track record to match it, it's Vaughn. He has a track record of being like a .250 hitter. I don't know. I think it's, I will say I'm rather concerned right now, and maybe it's because of the previous conversations we had just surrounding Andrew Vaughn. It might be time to just really start thinking about what's coming next and stop giving him the playing time.
Well, it's a situation. You nailed it right there. .250 career hitter, no pop, at least no consistent pop that we've seen so far. That's just not a major league first baseman anymore. As far as somebody who I think has maybe struggled a little bit and I think will turn it around, and this is actually going to shock you guys because, you know, you would think this would be the Andrew Benintendi. This is the spot for Duke to really just drive that point home. He had a bad defensive play today Really when it all kind of fell apart, but I've seen some things out of him that I've really liked, and it's Dominic Fletcher. And it's a guy that not a lot of people are high on. In fact, even when I was at the ballpark, a lot of people were really getting into Dominic Fletcher's ass in right field. It was kind of hilarious. But at the same time, I think he's a guy that there's something there. It's not a situation where I watch him and I'm like, man, this is who he's going to be. I think he is just, average, plateaued as humanly possible. I think he could potentially be a pretty good glove. I say that after a Sunday where he has a really bad defensive play on a ball in the outfield, but I think he's a guy that can potentially be a pretty solid guy, a pretty solid starter for
him. Yeah, as long as he's not going to hit. I think what's encouraging about him, I think to your point, last year had a 50% ground ball rate so far, 10 games, whatever, 36% ground ball rate. If he's going to cut it down like that, that's at least encouraging enough. But does he have the pop to hit more fly balls? I don't know. We'll find out. But if you're keeping the ball off the ground, you're in a pretty good place. Line drive percentage has gone from 15% to 27%. So there is potential to hold some value there. So I do like that pick.
All right. So now that we've talked about who we think can turn it around, this is why I held off from bringing up who I wanted to bring up, and I feel like our answer is going to be really similar. One player whose strong start you think carries throughout the season?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, there are actually a few players, for whatever reason, that I think will have strong seasons based off their starts, but I'll take Moncada because we've talked about him for, a while in the preseason episodes, and it's not just the contract year stuff, but it's the fact that he was so good last August and September. That seems to have carried over. His defense is as good as it has been, and his offense, he's taking its walks. He hasn't shown that power yet, but he did have one. I think he had like a very deep flyout on Sunday that was like 397 feet, like a home run in half of the ballpark, something like that. So like the power is there, but overall I'm encouraged with what I've seen from him just because he's playing good defense and getting on base. And if he does that all season, then he'll have value on a contender should he be traded at the deadline.
I'm avoiding what I assume is the obvious answer that Duke is mentioning. I'm going to go potentially two. I'm going to say one I'm intrigued by is actually Gavin Sheets. He's swinging less out of the zone. He's elevating the ball more. It's a very small sample size, but his ground ball rate is slashed down to like close to 20%. It's early. It's not a lot, but that's insanely low. Out of zone swing percentage, from 33% last year down to 23%. The chasing balls above his face is still somewhat continuing, but those are at least encouraging enough trends. I'm not saying he's the slugger of the future necessarily, but I'm saying there might be something positive there. The other one, I'm still avoiding the obvious answer. I love, and I'm surprised how much I love him, I love Eric Fetty. Like, I love how his stuff moves, the east-west type pitcher he is. I did not expect to like him, and I really think his stuff is going to play over the course of this year. I love how much it all moves. Everything moves in a different direction. It's either this way or that way or down a little bit. I really like his profile. I think if there's one thing, I'd like his... they call it a sweeper. I think I'd like it to have a little less vertical movement so that it's more all horizontal running. I think it's a little loopy at times still. I think that there's one critique I have, it's that. But I did not expect to like him as much as I do, so I'm going to go with him.
Eric Fetty, the man on the redemption arc. Like, I've been so excited watching Eric Fetty pitch because, like, not only was I just hyping him up to the moon as a bit of a meme before the season, but like being able to see a guy make it back to the majors and pitch well to start out, like, how can you not root for that guy? In my head, the obvious answer was Gavin Sheets. But then I thought about it, and I'm like, okay, no, it's not Gavin Sheets. It's Garrett Crochet, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, do we all have the wrong obvious? No, it's Garrett Crochet.
Yeah, right? But I mean, it's almost like Garrett Crochet is hitting like that just obvious where you don't even think about its status. And it, as we've said plenty of times already, it's still early. But man, has he found a way to really be able to hone in his stuff, not burn himself out early and be able to make it a little bit later in the starts than I think any of us expected. I think the coaching staff has done a good job monitoring his velocity. Steve Stone's talked about that quite a bit on the broadcast, but I think they genuinely have done a good job with that. And the only thing I would like to see from him, because his fastball is disgusting, obviously, and he goes pretty fastball heavy at times, and then he gets really slider heavy. His slider is, again, disgusting, goes across the entire plate, just completely jams up right-handed hitters. But I also would like to see him start to develop a changeup on the outside corner against righties, because I feel like that could just completely throw batters into a loop when they're expecting either that slider down low or that fastball up at the hands. Like, I think if he was able to develop that third pitch and go to that changeup on the corner opposite of a righty, I think the sky's the limit for this guy, because that's something that Chris Sale did really well. He was always fastball slider, but he was able to throw a changeup on the edge of that strike zone when guys were sitting slider, and it would just, they wouldn't know what to do. Either they'd stare at that pitch because they'd see it not break, or they would, or they'd swing inside of the zone thinking that it was going to be slider coming in, or it was going to be a fastball at their teeth. So, I mean, I really think he has the potential to really turn in as a long-term starter. And I see so much Chris Sale in him as it is. And I love those comparisons, because honestly, it's not even just a homer comparison. There's a lot of Chris Sale in him.
Yeah, I've tweeted similar things the past couple starts. His first one, he threw 4 or 5 changeups, and it has a good movement profile. It's not its best pitch ever, but it has a legitimate changeup movement profile that's different from his fastball. The last two starts, he's ditched it. I don't know why, especially later innings, like the Renfro homer on Sunday is a great example. He didn't get away with a slider he rolled because he was looking for a slider that rolled. And if you don't, if you keep yourself an 80% two-pitch pitcher, you're not going to be successful. Your cutter's a legitimate third pitch, and your changeup, I think, is a legitimate fourth pitch. So yeah, I completely agree. That's my biggest takeaway from the first couple series or so. Buddy, you need to throw your changeup more. Otherwise, you're going to get later into starts, and you're going to have happen to you what happened with Renfro today, where he's just able to sit on it, and you hang it just enough, and you're shit out of luck. Like, it's going to happen. You're going to make mistakes, but you can mitigate it when you have more pitches to throw.
Yeah, I think all things considered, it's definitely been, I mean, I've been blown away by Crochet, and I agree with your guys' comments, especially Duke, about the changeup to righties. I think would do him wonders. But to me, the most impressive thing isn't necessarily his stuff or the way he's locating, because we've seen that before from him. But really, it's just the ability for him to do this for, you know, 5-6 innings is right off the bat without really having a big buildup period is not something I expected. And it's good and bad. It's good long term because it gives me confidence that he can be a starter. Bad short term, because at a certain point he's going to hit some sort of magic innings number, or something's going to happen where it's like July and he's already being shut down at this rate. So we'll see how that goes. But overall, it's hard not to be anything but encouraged by what we've seen, especially because he's been able to keep the velocity up even deeper into starts, which I kind of expected him to be the kind of pitcher this year who's like really good first time through the order, and then kind of falls off, just not because he's not equipped, but just because he might not have the endurance at this point. But that appears to be wrong already, which is great.
And it really makes me wonder what Garrett Crochet's offseason looked like with simulated games. I would actually really like to know, I mean, if anybody has any sort of information about what his offseason ramp-up looked like, I'd really like to see how he prepared himself before he showed up to spring training. Because, you know, we spent some time going back and forth about the training staff early on. Potentially, the training staff could have given him a really good program during the winter to kind of find a way to be able to ramp up as a starter. Obviously, that doesn't substitute actual live games, but he seems really well equipped to be able to just jump right in, even from spring training in his first start. A lot more equipped than I expected. So it makes me wonder if he's really been ramping up for this over the course of the offseason. So, you know, we talked, okay, Garrett Crochet was like a big highlight. Gavin Sheets been a highlight, kind of falls off after that, but, I'm going to test you guys here a little bit. Give me a good highlight of the Chicago White Sox so far this season throughout the first week.
No. I mean, the only thing I was going to say was Crochet's changeup, and we already talked about it. The only thing is I'm glad that Braden Shumake got his Zach Remillard run of everyone saying he needed to play forever, and now he's back to doing exactly what I assumed and not hitting major league pitching. So I'm glad we got to that point already and we didn't have to have a is Braden Shoemake the next guy part of this episode. That's my biggest highlight. Not that I hate him, just that I he hit the homer and everyone's like, oh my God, like I want to see him play all the time. He's got this great swing. I'm like, no, like stop.
Right. Yeah. That was definitely one. Shoemake was one of the guys where I was not thrilled with him even making the roster. I kind of thought he should be in AAA and like prove they can hit AAA pitching at least. So when he hit that homer in his first at bat, I kind of like Jordan, my reaction was like, oh, like here it comes. Like, but to your point, he's kind of leveled off. The highlight I'll give actually is maybe a little sad now because he's injured, but those two at bats from Robert on the Saturday home game against the Tigers where he homered were two of my favorite at bats from him ever because of the way he got to full counts, was fouling off the pitcher's pitches, and then waited until he got something in the heart of the plate that he could do damage on. It's a shame that we didn't see that from him elsewhere this season. I mean, just in the, you know, 8-game sample or whatever he played. But those two at-bats were really encouraging just because I feel he controlled the strike zone in a way that he didn't when he was younger or even last year. So if he can get back this season, and I mean, he will get back this season, but if he can get back doing that this season, that would be great.
Actually, I will amend. Him saying, you brought it up perfectly, Nick, him saying he focused this offseason on zoning up, I have been waiting for a White Sox hitter to say that in the time I've been blogging about the team, and he's the first one to ever say it, and it just grew my heart a few sizes, and I've been waiting for someone to say that, particularly him, someone who I thought needed to do that, and I got a lot of shit for saying I thought he needed to do that. So it just felt good to see him say, yeah, I focused on zoning up because none of our hitters seem to do that.
That's fair. I mean, it's nice to hear that your heart's growing, Laz. Sometimes
it grew. It might not be currently growing. It grew in that moment we've had about a week and a half since then.
I mean, we already kind of talked about really the highlights, you know, with like, you know, Gavin Sheets with his start, Garrett Crochet looking like a potentially great starter. Fetty, obviously, I think is one that I really have liked so far. I got to go to a guy that hasn't been mentioned so far, and it's got to be Corey Lee. And I think he's carried over from spring training pretty well, and I think in the opportunities he's gotten, he's looked pretty good. I think there might be. He's starting to show that potential of what we got for, you know, what we got from Houston in that trade for what he was supposed to be for Houston. You know, obviously it's very early and his opportunities have been limited. We've been treated with the wonderful Martin Maldonado most every day, but I do get a little, I get a little up whenever I see Corey Lee in the starting lineup. And I'm like, all right, yeah, I'm probably going to watch this whole game because I want to see Corey Lee at the bat. I want to see what he does behind the plate. And I think overall he's been pretty solid for the role they've put him in, and I just hope that we continue to see a little bit more Corey Lee every week. And I remember Laz telling me that I shouldn't put my eggs in the batch of Corey Lee, and I don't know. I think you put a good little hex on him, so I think he might just spite you at this point.
You know what? That's a perfect segue into the final thing we're going to do today. I'm going to make you put your money where your mouth is. Because what we're doing for this season, it's our first draft of this year. What we're doing is we're all going to pick 5 players and we're going to review at the end of the year who drafted the best team. And it's really hard because you have like 3 good players and 2 of them are injured. So it's really going to be a lot about figuring out who can win on the margins, who can find someone that really does well that we're not expecting to do well. We'll do the same snake draft style as last time. Unfortunately for me, we got the same order, Duke, myself, and then Nick, so I am stuck with the center pick. As we saw last time where it was memorable moments, I sucked, and I'm not happy about being in the middle, but Duke, you've got the first pick, and you can start us off with, I assume, Corey Lee, since you're so high on him. Take it away.
Come on now, don't do that to me. I know for a fact Corey Lee will be available later, so you know I'm gonna hedge my bets.
You sure?
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
If one of you drafts Corey Lee, I'll buy you a fucking beer. Timing sucks, but I'm just gonna go with the safest bet imaginable. I'm gonna go with Luis Robert. when he comes back from injury, I assume Luis is going to be just fine, and he's going to put in a pretty good season. So what needs to be said? It's Luis Robert. Injury sucks. It's going to take a little bit of time for that to pay off for me, but I think by the end of the year, I think it will.
Ballsy. I was not planning on you taking Robert first, I'll be honest. I'm going to take Crochet, who I assumed you were going to take first. I was
thinking about it, but it's like, oh man, Luis.
I think there's the same issue, though, of how many games you're getting out of. We know Crochet is going to be on an innings limit. I'm arguing it from the standpoint of I will find enough half-win players in rounds 3, 4, and 5 that I'll take whatever I can get from Crochet and assume anyone else we're taking in those final three rounds adds up to whatever he can provide.
Yeah, those were definitely a strong first two picks, although honestly kind of similar to Jordan. I was expecting to have the option of one of them here. I thought you have to be scared of Robert because we don't necessarily know the injury severity. And then Crochet, because of if there's an innings on that, but still probably the safest picks. So with my first of two back-to-back picks here, I will take Moncada because of it's we're using war to calculate this. So defense, you know.
I just want to let you know, if he took Crochet, I was taking Moncada. He would not have been available to you because I did not want to give him to you. I just want that to be clear. I would have let you have Robert simply because I didn't want you to have Moncada, but I couldn't pass Crochet.
I'm just hearing a lot of players not named Corey Lee right now.
Yeah, so I got another pick coming up right after Nick. So, but also Nick has another pick.
I'd say who should say that you'll
hang
have
on. Now Nick has another pick. Wait a minute.
Yeah. No, that is funny too because I mean your Moncada strategy. Like I like Robert and Moncada basically equally. I mean I know Robert's better, but like I would have been happy with him. But anyway, with my second round pick, I will take Eric Fetty because.
Damn it.
I mean, want a starting pitcher there, and his to Jordan's point from earlier, his stuff actually looks pretty solid.
Oh, now I need to think for a second.
I will not root for Eric Fetty any less, even though you drafted him, Nick. I just want you to know that. I'm still a Fetty guy to the absolute end.
Can we skip my pick? No. I'm going to put my money where my mouth is in what I said earlier. I'm going to go with Gavin Sheets. I'm going to buy that he at least puts up a decent enough year and go from there. Because I'm not ready to make a defense-only pick yet. So I'm going with Gavin Sheets.
Oh, boy. Leaves me a lot to pick here. Yeah, I'm trying really hard to think of, like, safe picks, but I'm really trying to battle, like, the homer in my head. Because I could easily go back-to-back with just the most.
I left you the ability to go homer right
I
here.
I can see it coming. Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, okay, yeah. You know, whatever. I guess I'm going to sit on... Gonna go Aloy Jimenez because I think when he comes back, if he stays healthy, blah, blah, blah. You know how I feel about Aloy. Same thing, blah, blah, blah. I'm gonna draft Andrew Benintendi because I think he turns it around, blah, blah, blah.
Well, you're already losing because Benintendi's got negative 0.5 war, so
that's okay.
Third place for you right now.
He will not have negative 5 by the end of the year.
Oh my god, it's my pick again. funny how that works. I'm gonna go with. Here's another one where I'm putting my money where my mouth is a little bit. I don't like that I'm doing this, but I'm going to do this because I don't see a world where he doesn't get significant playing time, and that's Nicky Lopez. And you can squint and he can put up a one-win season. And I think in the third round of this draft, if you can get someone that puts up a one-win season, you're in a good place.
Yeah. Not a bad pick. I had him on my radar. I was like, maybe I would take him here just because he has a 5-win season a couple of years ago. I mean, obviously he hit better that year, but his defense is so good that he has a high floor. Yeah.
Right.
All
right.
I have two now. So with my first of two, I'll take Michael Soroka. I haven't been that thrilled with his stuff so far, but because he's a starting pitcher and we're using war, then it seems like, you know, he'll at least get innings if he stays healthy. With my second one, I'll take another player that I frankly don't love, but I think we had a lot of opportunities, and that is Dominic Fletcher. Sorry, Duke, if you're going to take him, just because regular outfielder, you know. I mean, I think the bat is better than what he's shown so far. Sunday was pretty good for him, so hopefully he builds off of that, but has some opportunities at least.
I do want to say, yeah, I was really hard on Michael Soroka watching his first start as a White Sox, but... Man, I don't want any, like, it's in the same vein of Eric Fetty. I don't want anyone to succeed more than Michael Soroka, just because of like where he's been, the highs he's seen and the lows that he's gotten to. I really just want to see him be able to become an everyday starting pitcher, you know, every fifth day, whether it's for us, whether for it's another team. Cause like the guy has the talent. He's never really had overpowering stuff, but he's able to place the ball well. And that's a guy who's just gotten devastated by injuries, fell into a really hard situation, got injured before the Braves won the World Series, which is just absolutely brutal. And it's a guy that I'll just root for sure. So
I didn't pick, like, if you had left Soroka for this pick, I would have taken it. I have also not been impressed with his stuff overall. Here's where I'm either going to win the draft or I'm going to look like an absolute moron. The rule is 40 man. And we know there's a certain shortstop on the 40 man. I'm going with Colson Montgomery.
Is he on the 40 man roster right now?
I mean, yes, he is. He is.
I don't see him.
I'm not. He's not. What? He's not.
I was gonna say Colson be gone by now, dude.
Oh shit.
They'll add him when they have to. Basically, is my understanding.
They have Ramos on it though.
Because he's been in the org for 5 years.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. I lose. I put all my eggs in the basket of taking him late. I am so screwed.
I mean, to be honest, I would have taken him.
I literally drafted two players on the IL, dude. I mean.
Oh, my God. What have I done? Okay. I am going to go with, and this is someone we didn't mention at all earlier, and I was surprised we didn't, because I have a point about him I want to make, Michael Kopech. I like that he's at the back of the bullpen right now.
I hate you so much.
He needs to throw his slider more. He has, for some reason, ditched the pitch, and he's like throwing 90% fastballs. Like, throw your slider again, dude. It's a great pitch, and you're going to be an effective closer if you do.
I'm really mad that I missed out on Michael Kopech, and I'm even madder that you got him, Jordan.
Just be upset at the White Sox. I had Montgomery labeled for this pick, so I did not realize he was not in the 40 man.
So this is the Dominic Leon pick, right?
This is where you go.
No,
with
absolutely not. That was a joke. Take that off the record immediately. Oh wow, I have so much to pick from here. All right, well, I'm gonna go Corey Lee, just because I think if he continues to play like he is, he should get more opportunities. I don't want to hate Martin Maldonado, but my entire baseball life, I've hated Martin Maldonado, and I still don't like him as a White Sox. Really want to see Corey Lee behind the plate. This was going to be my Kopech pick. I was going to feel really happy with the way I ended this. All right, so I'm going to pick a minor leaguer who's actually on the 40-man roster for the chance that he potentially comes up, and I'll go with Brian Ramos, because I don't trust anybody else on the starting roster on the infield, catcher, or outfielder side. I'm going to lose.
All right, I'm going to take – yeah, I feel really good about not coming in last this year. I went with a bunch of – yeah, Gavin Sheets is not a safe pick. I went with – neither is Michael Kopech. I take back that little thing I said about feeling good about not coming in last. I'm going to go with Clevinger, because I think in the vein of starting pitcher, I wanted to get two out of this, and I only ended up with one. Granted, it was the one I think will put up the best season, so I'm not going to be mad. But they signed him for a reason. They will plan to put him in this rotation for better or for worse. I don't want to lose as badly as I did last time, and I think I might be on that trajectory. Mike Clevinger.
All right. So I'll close it out here. I was thinking about taking Brian Ramos, even though he's in Double A right now. But if Moncada gets traded, I could see them just bumping him up. So, I guess no one's going to take Andrew Vaughn. I'm not going to take him here. That says a lot about how down we are. But and even
that is bad that nobody's taking Vaughn.
Right. I'm going to do a bit of a out there pick. I'm going to take Lenin Sosa, because I actually kind of like the way he's looked at the plate, and from a patient standpoint, that's like the one thing that's been missing. And early on, it's been better, even like 10 at bats or whatever. So I'm taking a real risk that he gets more starts this season.
I took Gavin Sheets, bro. I don't like, and in my head, it sounded real good when I did it. I'm like, no, that there's a very good chance Jimenez comes back and Sheets just doesn't. play. I don't know what I was thinking. So I really got to just stop flying off the hip with these. I have not done well.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't feel any better about the White Sox roster right now.
There was no doing well in this one, though. Like, we left Andrew Vaughn off of this. We took Brian Ramos, Corey Lee, and Lenin Sosa all before Andrew Vaughn. That says a lot.
Hey, listen, like I said on the podcast of Beefloaf, I'd play Brian Ramos at first base at this freaking point. Well, Gavin Sheets, obviously.
Yeah, watching. I need my second round pick to produce. It's like fantasy baseball, but worse.
You know, I normally come away when we record these feeling a little bit better, and I just don't. So I feel like this is a good point to just wrap it up in a nice little package because, God, I hate the White Sox so much. I love them, but I hate them. All right, I guess with that, unless you guys have anything else to add, ladies and gentlemen, that's all we have this week for the Sox on 35th podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Also, be sure to check out the website, SoxOn35th.com, as well as following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at SoxOn35th to stay up to date with your Chicago White Sox. This has been Duke Coughlin, joined as always by Jordan Lazowski and Nick Gower. We'll be back as we next week as we cover another week of White Sox baseball. Hawk Harrelson was probably doing cartwheels in his living room watching the defensive downfall on Sunday. Thank you, and go Sox.
Nicky Lopez for MVP. This is where we're at. Go Sox.
All right. Go Sox.